Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
South Carolina's got everything, natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch, Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your fully independent Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Corgan. How the devil are we this morning, chaps? How are we doing, George? Are we okay?
That's a good question. I'm kind of reeling slightly after Monday night. What do we feel? Positive? Do we feel angry? Do we feel devastated?
Still feel knackered, to be honest.
Knackered, definitely knackered.
Yeah,
I'm in a state of slight strange confusion.
Yeah, it's not quite that clear on what to feel at the minute, is it? Because it was a positive and a negative. It's very, very strange. Chris Woff, be our guide. How are you feeling today?
Yeah, tired, I suppose. I'm drinking a coffee, actually, out of the mug that producer Ollie very kindly got us, which is the Carabao Cup final tribute. It has the CFAX page of the resultant. And weirdly, Newcastle don't seem to have a second goal scorer on there anymore. I don't know what's happened there.
Great header by Jacob Murphy. That's all I remember. Brilliant goal. Yes, very good, very good. Let's quickly have a little voice note from Simon in San Diego, who watched that Liverpool game at the Fair Play Bar in North Park.
Just got home, had to wrap my head around the end of that. Typical kick in the... typical. I thought we probably wouldn't play as well as that, but boy, you can be proud of those boys. What a performance that was. I think 2-2 would have been the fair result, but you can't leave the man open like that. Fair play to the boys and the effort. Yeah, well, we've lost Anthony Gordon for 3, I suppose. So we're going to be looking, scrambling, paying silly money to try and get a forward in. Onwards to Leeds.
There's a wonderful mix of pride and complete devastation in his voice there, isn't there? It's unbelievable.
Well, we hadn't heard that before, but I think that sort of does some up what I was trying to get across at the top of the show.
Beautifully.
Like, pride and absolute devastation rolled into one. Thank you, Simon. We are all you.
And you are all of us. Yes. Let's do some quick headlines then, chaps, before we get into the meat of this. George, Liverpool fallout, specifically injuries.
Well, yes, so we know what happened against Liverpool. Anthony Gordon sending off, 3-match suspension, added to which a concussion for Fabian Schär, which means he will miss Leeds, and then an abductor injury to Joe Linton, and Tonali going off with what looked like a shoulder injury. Scans were happening at the start of the week. There was some good news that came courtesy of Joe Linton's wife, who said that his injury was not too serious on social media, but he will miss Leeds, and it does leave Newcastle needing to pick up the pieces from that match.
Which leads us nicely, Chris, onto potential midfield signings.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely nothing certain on this front, but given what happened on Monday night, given Newcastle lost two-thirds of their starting midfield and a third of the midfielders they have at their disposal, potentially seriously, or the feed it was seriously to begin with, they have at least explored the possibility that they may need to bring in another midfielder by deadline, which is not something they were thinking of before, whether that be permanent or loan. It's still to be determined, depending on the severities of the injury, and if Joe Linton isn't serious, then maybe they won't actually do that, but it has at least been talked about.
Fair play. George Alexander Isak, limbo / deadlock.
Yes, well, if you thought that we would not mention him in this podcast, you are very sadly mistaken. Yes, there have been talks between Isak and directors of the club, but as things stand, there's been no deadlock broken. He is still saying that he wants to leave. Newcastle are still saying he is not for sale. And of course, we are still all waiting to see what Liverpool do next. That's the way things stand at the moment.
Chris Jorgenstrand Larsen and the pursuit of a striker.
So I mentioned in shock, really, at the end of the Liverpool Matchday podcast that Newcastle had a £50 million bid rejected by Wolves for Jorgenstrand Larsen. They've now had a second £55 million bid turned down. It seems like their pursuit is not quite over, even if that value is eye-watering. They are still interested in Johan Visser as well, though that looks unlikely. And they are desperate to sign a striker as a Callum Wilson replacement before the deadline. But as things stand, they do not have a centre-forward arriving.
And finally, George, a huge signing for the Lasses.
Yes, massive, massive deal. Morgan Gatrat joins Newcastle United on loan from Orlando Pride till the end of the year. She is a double World Cup winner with the United States. She has recently won the NWSL Championship and Shield with the Pride. She is already talking about extending her time at Newcastle. I've interviewed her. We'll get a listen to that later on in the pod. Really exciting. What a statement of intent and ambition from Newcastle United women.
Wonderful stuff. Right then, let's move on, chaps.
Let's fella gani proparaji.
The transfer window, 5 days left. Alexander Isak's met with club officials, but he's indicated his desire to leave remains firm, Chris.
Yes, so on Monday, ahead of the Liverpool game, which Alexander Isak was not at, Jamie Rubin, the co-owner, and a contingent from PIF, including Jacobo Solis, who is a director, visited Alexander Isak at his home, and discussions took place. We don't know the exact ins and outs of exactly what occurred in terms of in those discussions, but the noises from them subsequently is that, well, Isak's position hasn't changed. He seemingly is still not back in training. He's not going to be involved against Leeds, as far as we're aware, unless there's a dramatic turn of events. Even though usually Eddie Howe would not just thrust someone straight back into the side, but given Newcastle's
don't have an awful lot of options, really, do you?
Yeah, go up front then maybe you wouldn't require much training time with the team to be seen as potentially the best option. But yeah, for now, it seems that hasn't changed. A resolution has to arrive. Eddie Howe was asked about it on Monday. Obviously, by the next Monday night, 7 p.m. deadline, he's either staying, and then we see what the fallout is after that, or he goes before then. And for a deal that would be, we suspect, a British club record deal, that would take some negotiating, and also the paperwork would take quite a while to get all the way through, so you'd have to think that the wheels would be in motion in the next couple of days. Newcastle remain adamant he's not for sale, and that hasn't changed after Monday night's talks, or Monday's talks during the day, regardless of whatever Isak did intimate. But yes, unfortunately for us all, we are still talking about this because it keeps dragging on.
I want to mention, it's a bit of a fallout from sort of our pod, our matchday pod. I hope people are listening to those pods. Hope you enjoy them. Let us know what you think so far. But like, I still can't get my head around that he missed that. That he missed
crazy,
that match, kind of voluntarily. You know, that atmosphere, and I know that's not what it's about. It's not like he said, "I don't want to play against Newcastle versus Liverpool definitively." He's just not playing full stop.
Like, yeah.
I sort of woke up on Tuesday morning feeling, you know, my sort of opinion had hardened to him. It's like you see the commitment from those 11 players and the subs that came on the pitch. You know, really astonishing. That defiance, the quality, the running, everybody fighting together. And I don't know. It just feels so upsetting that he has removed himself from that. That he's refusing to play. And I kind of wanted to bring you in, Taylor, actually, and just sort of get your thoughts on it. I mean, obviously, the strategy of the club has been to kind of tough it out and then to bring him back round and back into the team. But I felt more angry about the whole thing on Tuesday morning than I think I have at any other time.
Well, literally, just before we started this call, I was saying the same thing to Chris and to producer Ollie, that after the Liverpool game, I kind of thought, do you know what? If you don't want to be part of that, if you don't want to be involved in that kind of occasion and you're standing firm on this, then maybe this is it. Maybe that's it. I felt more angry after seeing that on Monday night than I did beforehand. I think I kind of, like you say, I think my feelings towards it have hardened a bit as well. I don't know. I just don't understand how the situation comes around where we could ever reintegrate him back into the team now. It just feels like a lost cause.
So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I sort of wanted to mention it. I do think, like, with all of these things, there are obviously pieces in a jigsaw, aren't there? There's Newcastle's stance, there's what Liverpool do next, there's Isak's stance, but there's also like the tipping point with what you already have at the club. There's the dressing room. There's the dressing room which Isak is now removed from, you know, but effectively by his own design.
What I will say though about that, George, sorry to cut you off, is that after that performance on Monday night, you know, you can probably go a long way to saying that the whole situation hasn't really affected the players on the pitch.
Oh, not in a negative
way. Because the performance they put in was monumental. And if anything, it's galvanised them, you know, if anything.
It's the other way around, isn't it? It's like, do they start looking at Isak in a different way too? Yeah. It's like, you know, the players dropping like flies, giving absolutely everything in matches, see the injuries that are happening, and, you know, they've got this world-class striker who wants out of that. Now, Eddie Howe on Friday said, yes, of course, players would welcome him back into it. All I'm saying is that this is another piece of the jigsaw when everybody is deciding or trying to find a resolution to this. You have to weigh up the pros and cons, the damage and the lack of damage. You know, is there a tipping point where Isak staying at the club causes more damage than him actually going? Now, I'm not saying that it's reached that stage yet in terms of how people are feeling inside the club. I haven't had any, you know, sense that Newcastle's position has changed. I'm just raising it as an issue because all of these things are just so delicate. And it's one of the things that Howe has been very keen to do this summer has been to, on the one hand, keep the door open to Isak, but also play fair to the rest of his squad.
There was something slightly odd, I thought, on Monday. And I get it was a massive game regardless, and Newcastle against Liverpool under the lights, and that they were against the champions. But when you saw, like, however it was, 10 minutes in, Burns sliding across and getting the ball ahead of Gakpo and then, like, punching the air to the crowd and then the way Bruno was to the crowd, it's sort of odd in one sense when you actually think about it, that a lot of the noise that's been generated around it and a lot of the sort of feeling is around the Alexander Isak situation. It's kind of a little bit weird in a sense that his sort of teammates, I know that's because everyone wants to show this sort of unity, but there is a sort of, there's something that's sort of a little bit incongruous there about that whole situation as well.
What do you mean though?
Well, in terms of, because part of when Taylor's talking about them, when you were talking earlier about your anger towards Alexander Isak, it's like, well, he's their teammate and all the talk is that he's going to be sort of brought back in. And yet, a large part of this situation has been at least partly generated by him, by Alexander Isak himself. And yet, his own teammates are the ones who they're sort of joining in with this sort of collective feeling. I get entirely why, and I'm not having to go at them for it. I'm not saying that that's aimed at Isak, but I think there is also a slightly incongruous element to that as well, because they are his teammates and they are the ones that are going to be sort of welcoming him back.
But that's us against the world, isn't it? I think that's very
classic. I get that. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just think there is a slightly incongruous element to it as well.
Yeah, no, I understand. But it's us against the world. It's St. James's against the world. It's like everyone's looking at us. Everyone's kind of wanting us to fail. That'll be the narrative that they're sort of promoting inside the dressing room, that I've said. And it's like, let's show the world who and what we are and stick together. I totally get what you're saying, but I just think, you know, it is that. It's noises off, and this is us, this is what we do.
I mean, there's a very good argument to suggest that maybe they were a little bit too over the top on Monday night, and that the discipline wasn't there maybe, and that, It's all right letting the reins off and going for it and being aggressive, but you do have to have control, don't you?
We talked about that. Yeah, we talked about that on the Matchday Pod. It's very difficult if you're playing on the edge like that. It's incredibly easy to step over the line.
Yeah,
we recorded that pod before we saw Anthony Gordon's message on Instagram, which I thought was actually very good and quite important.
It was required, wasn't it?
I thought he got the tone right. But that's it. It's like if Newcastle's tone was set by Gordon flying around the pitch, most of it controlled, most of it done very well. He makes one mistimed tackle and bang, you're suffering for it. They were on the edge, but that comes with peril, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Chris, movement on strikers. We spoke about Strand Larsen at the top of the show there. What's happening with the hunt for a replacement for Callum Wilson specifically?
Well, so as I mentioned at the sort of top of the show, Newcastle have seen two bids rejected for him now, having also had bids turned down for Johan Visser at Brentford. Visser, the noises from people close to Johan Visser is that he still wants to come and they still think there could be movement. Brentford are looking at a striker at Dortmund and alternatives, and that may free him up. But there are others who, at the Brentford end, who've been given less sort of indication that he's likely to leave over the course of the last couple of weeks and suggested he's basically replaceable for them. And certainly some people at Newcastle feel that one has felt forlorn for a while, even if it is still sort of live. Strand Larsen, it seems that he's moved to the top of the list because Newcastle don't see there being movement on Visser. And so a £50 million bid on Monday turned down, £55 million bid on Tuesday turned down, when he also scored twice off the bench for Wolves in the Carabao Cup as they knocked out West Ham, I think it was, who he scored against. Newcastle are led to believe he's very keen to join, but he isn't like agitating at the Wolves end in a more similar way to Isak or Visser or for in their respective situations. Newcastle, despite Wolves being basically putting out a message that he's not for sale and having the rather bullish sort of impression in that regard, Newcastle suggests that they've been given strong indications behind the scenes that there is some movement on that and that they wouldn't have made one, certainly not two bids, if that wasn't the case. Yeah. But I mean, the price is already... He signed for £23 million for Wolves permanently a few weeks ago because he was on loan last season. They had an option there. And Newcastle have already gone more than double that with both of the offers so far. But I think I think there's a recognition at this end that it's far beyond what they'd really ideally like to pay. But A, they're in a desperate position. And B, the striker market is so... There's so little depth within it at the moment. There's very few strikers moving, and Newcastle have basically explored just about every single option out there. And the prices are ridiculously high, partly because of that. So I think while Newcastle ideally would not be making those sort of offers and potentially even going slightly higher, we think they may return with a third bid. That is where they are, and they desperately want a striker, and they really like Strand Larsen. I think he can bring something, and they do see him as the Callum Wilson replacement, supposedly.
I kind of think it's very interesting. I mean, watching that performance against Liverpool on Monday night, there wasn't much missing, was there? I mean, in terms of, you know, their overall quality, the way they got at Liverpool, the way they pushed at them. Obviously, if you bring an out-and-out centre-forward into that team, the tactics change, the approach changes a bit. But the thing with Strand Larsen and the fee, it kind of does call to mind a bit Chris Wood and what Newcastle did, you know, not too long after the takeover, when they spent all of that money in that window. And people took the piss out of Newcastle for the amount of money that they spent on Chris Wood. Now, ultimately, he didn't score a lot of goals. I mean, I know that in that spell. And then he moves on to Forest. And, you know, at the time, Newcastle fans were saying, not good enough. You know, well done, but, you know, not really good enough. Newcastle got some money back. And then Chris Wood had a phenomenal season with Forest last year, banging in goals. So this is a bit of a mixed point in which I'm sort of raising lots of things. But in a system that was designed to get the best out of him, Wood showed that he is an excellent centre-forward. He's not Alexander Isak. He's nothing like him.
No.
But he can be effective. And so I suppose I'm sort of making a point that overspending, if that's the right word, on a centre-forward who can be effective in your system isn't necessarily a terrible thing. Newcastle are crying out for a striker, for a number nine. They need one. They've got to get one. I don't think there's an alternative, in spite of what Howe said at the end of last week. They've got to get somebody, particularly, you know, now with what's happened with Anthony Gordon. But I suppose what I'm doing is I'm defending pragmatism. You know, there's nothing wrong with pragmatism. We're all looking for Newcastle to sort of sign this Champions League quality centre forward or centre forwards. And, you know, maybe in this window that can't happen. But if you have a forward, part of a system where he knows what he's doing, he knows where he's supposed to be, knows where the goal is, you know, I think Newcastle can be in a good place. Again, I'm not trying to make the point that I'd be happy if Isak goes or whatever, but bringing in a forward, even if it's a forward who might be limited, as long as he knows the system and the way Eddie Howe works, I think I've come round to a different way of thinking on that. And if it takes paying, quote unquote, too much money, then so be it.
I get what you're saying, but I suppose my counterpoint would be, as things stand, the bids have already taken him so that he would be the second most expensive player in Newcastle United history.
Yeah.
And I know that the market is inflated, but I think more than anything, the point I'm just trying to make is that I think highlights Newcastle's desperation, which is the point you made.
Yeah.
If you just put it in the sort of stark historical terms, it would only be Alexander Isak, unless Newcastle even go higher than that. Supposedly Wolves want 70, some people are suggesting 70 million. I think probably closest to 60 would probably do it, but he would be the second most expensive player in the history.
There's a case as well to be said. Obviously, it is an awful lot of money, but clubs now know that Newcastle are desperate for a striker and they will milk every single penny out of those deals that they can. And then that is just unfortunately the way it is.
If you're looking at the domestic market, you know, there just aren't bargains there, are there? I mean, there just aren't. But anyway, like, all I'm saying is at this point, compromise and pragmatism aren't necessarily bad things to be thinking about.
Yeah, and just after the fact, I think it adds greater context to Newcastle offering Callum Wilson a sort of incentivized pay-as-you-play deal, and then also considering Dominic Calvert-Lewin early in the window, because if you offered either of those options to Newcastle right now, I don't think either of them would be sniffed at too much. It might not be what everyone wants, but I think there was perhaps a little bit of foresight there that they recognised it was a very difficult market they were entering into striker-wise.
To go back to the point that I made before, I would put Chris Wood in this team and I would think he would score goals. He would score you goals in this team. Don't you?
I mean, with Alanga playing one side and Harvey Barnes on the other side, I could see Chris Wood scoring goals in this team. But, you know, ifs and buts. There we go. Looking at midfield options as well, Chris, as we mentioned earlier on. Anything likely? And are there any departures as well?
Well, I mean, in terms of on anything likely, as I mentioned earlier, it's not that they're definitely looking necessarily to sign midfielder. It just became a sort of live topic that they had to look at as they were assessing the situation. I think depending on the severity, certainly of Tonali's injury, it may be that if he's out for a prolonged period, it's weird because actually in the initial aftermath, it seemed that Tonali's was the one they were less concerned about in terms of the thought that because it's muscular for Joe Linton, that it could potentially be quite a bad problem. The suggestions, at least from his wife publicly, is that maybe that the noises are actually slightly better on that one. So I don't have any specific names on that front either. I don't think Newcastle even did at that point, although they will have lists of players they've tracked for a long period of time. It was just if we need to be ready in case we do need to make a move here because we can't afford to lose two of our starting midfielders for a prolonged period going into the Champions League campaign. In terms of potential outgoings, Matt Target has joined Middlesbrough on loan for the remainder of the season. There was interest from other Championship clubs, and he is someone who had fallen down the pecking order at Newcastle, hasn't played that much really since signing permanently after his initial successful loan spell for the first 6 months of 2022. Obviously, Tino Livramento has been playing left back, Lewis Hall is back fit, and Target hasn't been in the squad, so he was someone who Newcastle were willing to let go. Jamal Lascelles' situation is interesting. He hasn't been in the last two matchday squads. Obviously, with Malik Chow's arrival, there is depth there, even if Fabian Cher has suffered from concussion. It's not definite that he would go, and I don't even know of any specific interest, but given that he's in the final year of his contract and unlikely to get much game time despite being club captain, I think there's a prospect he could go. Someone like Harrison Ashby as well and other sort of fringe players. There'd been suggestions Willisula could go on loan. I think that's looking increasingly unlikely. A, Eddie Howe would like to keep him for greater depth anyway, but B, don't have a centre
literally
forward.
Nobody else,
can't sign a centre forward. And he may start this weekend, so yeah.
Yes, Al Ramayan as well was in town for the game. George, one thing we do know is that when he's about, shit tends to get done, doesn't it?
Certainly gets talked about being done.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. I hope that's not being too cynical. So, why is this significant? Well, it's significant, of course, because he is the chairman and PIF are the majority owners of the club, and you know, he has a huge number of other roles. Newcastle United are actually a very small part of Piff's portfolio, as we know. And so the feeling is, when he's here and is able to sort of turn his full-time glare, as it were, on Newcastle, that stuff happens. As of yet, there haven't been any consequences that we know of. We know that there was a meeting with Isak in which, you know, the club were trying to get him to commit himself back to them. That hasn't happened yet, hasn't materialised yet. And we'll have to see, you know, we'll have to see what plays out. I mean, it did feel like a kind of power play seeing him there on the pitch at the end of the game, along with Jamie Rubin and other members of the board, commiserating with the team, shaking hands, giving people hugs. That felt like a sort of big statement of support. I think that was good in terms of, you know, in that sense. But, you know, where things shake out, we'll have to see. I mean, we're sort of getting conflicting messages from different aspects of the club about what happens with Isak. You know, you'll get, you'll get people around at the minute saying ultimately it'll be the majority owners who decide what happens if there's a decision to be made in terms of another bid coming in, and you get people around PIF saying, oh well, no, that's a football decision. So we'll have to wait and see. Are there consequences to him being here? We haven't seen any yet, but let's see what happens if and when Liverpool come back in.
Right then, chaps, let's have a quick break. We'll be back in a moment to talk about a new signing for the Lasses. So, chaps, Morgan Gittrat, another statement of intent from the Lasses, a massive signing, George.
Yeah, what a big deal this feels like. And a couple of days before her signing was announced, I went down to St James's Park when she got there to speak to her, to do an interview with her. And, yeah, I mean, Newcastle have now made 6 signings this summer, some big ambitious moves in there. Jordan Nobbs, the England international, of course, very experienced. But this just feels, in emotional terms, like a proper statement. You're talking about a double World Cup winner, someone who's won it all in the United States very, very recently. It's a short-term deal to start with, but already she's thinking about extending it. And, yeah, dropping down into the Championship is a very different moment for her and her career. Had a lovely chat with her at St James's Park, so have a listen. This is quite surreal. Less than 4 years ago, this team, this club, wasn't affiliated with the men's team. It was a fourth tier team in English football. And not too long after that, we're welcoming a 2-time World Cup winner to the club. It's a pretty astonishing moment for Newcastle. Can you please just start by saying why and how, and give us some background into how this has happened?
Yeah, I think it's a really amazing project that's going on here. You know, when Ben talked to my agent and me and tried to just sell me on it, and I think that it seems like the club is extremely ambitious. And at this point in my career, I'm really excited to join something like this to help lead a team and make history. I've always wanted to come and play overseas and experience a different football and culture and immerse myself into something like Newcastle United. I've heard nothing but amazing things with the city and the fans and just the culture of it all. And then obviously Becky, I had a good conversation with her, and it seems like everyone is headed in the right direction. And for me, it was just a great opportunity and like the perfect timing in my career of leaving Orlando and wanting to join something like this.
So can you put that into some kind of context for us as well, please? Because obviously you've just had a, you know, incredible year at Orlando last year, won the championship, won the Shield, still competing, you're still playing regularly, just made a world record signing. So what's your thought process about leaving there as much as coming here?
It's a good question. So I had an option year in my contract. They have to tell you ahead of time if they're planning on doing that. And obviously there's salary cap rules there, and at the time they can exercise my option for next year, and so I'm a free agent, you know, once they tell me that. So I can look around the world and the market and within the league and just kind of see what other opportunities are out there. And honestly, some other opportunities came up, but this one just caught my eye just because of the project. And something like this is, I've always loved joining places that I could help make better, and I could like leave a lasting impact, and this is going to be no different, hopefully. And I've done it all in the NWSL. I've done a lot in my career in America, and I had a short stint of playing in France.
Yeah.
I didn't have a great experience, so playing overseas, and I've always kind of wanted to like rewrite that chapter and enjoy something different. And I've played in the NWSL for, I don't know, 11 seasons now. I would say that my technical ability and my skill set isn't always utilized the most in that league because it's so athletic and so transitional. And when I watch European players play, they all have this base technical ability and technical skill. And I feel like most European players watch the game of soccer from a very young age and they're immersed in it from the beginning of their life. In America, it's just different. People don't watch the game of soccer very often, and there's not a ton of teams in the rich culture than the history of football in the United States. And I think that that impacts the development of players. And then also what's made us successful for so long on the women's side is our athleticism and our physical ability. And I think that sometimes we rely on that too much. Sometimes the technical side, the cerebral side gets lost. 70% of the players in the United States and the way that they're developed from a young age is more about winning, not development. And it's more about run and gun, use your athleticism, and they forget to teach the technical side of the game.
Have you ever played in a league that is not the top league in your career? Well, you wouldn't have.
No.
So that's fascinating as well, isn't it? I wonder what that challenge will be like for you.
Yeah, I'm wondering too. Time will tell, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you asked maybe 28-year-old me, it would have been really extremely challenging in a lot of ways. Because even when I went to France, I struggled with that. There was two good games, quality good games in 4 or 5 months, whereas in the NWSL, there's a battle every weekend. Now, I feel like I'm in a different place in my career where I'm excited to be a leader and like help the younger players. And I'm just at a different place. And, you know, I've done 12, 13, 14 years of the physical grind, you know, and I think that that's a part where it's like, okay, well, maybe this is just a different style. This is a different ask from a physical output. And I think that those things can all be different, especially at this point in my career.
This is a very exciting club to be around at the moment, both teams. Mm-hmm. How much is that sort of impacting in the United States? How are Newcastle viewed from over there? And, you know, what was your first thought when that call came in?
It depends on who you're around and who, you know, you're asking. But when I told a lot of my teammates and my good friends in Orlando that this was kind of my opportunity and where I wanted to go, like, everyone was so excited for me. And obviously a lot of them follow the Premier League and know Newcastle. And but yeah, because it's so different. It's so different. So I think everyone was really excited for the opportunity. And I think, like you were saying, it's just a really exciting time to be a part of this, especially the women's team.
I already know the answer to this question, but the ambition is that Newcastle get promoted.
Correct.
This season.
So hopefully we're not there too long.
And your deal, it's a loan, it's a short-term deal. Is there a chance that you could fall in love with this place and that this could be extended beyond
yes,
your initial
definitely.
Spell?
Definitely.
Okay. So how do you think your World Cup kind of experience can impact Newcastle?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. That's probably a lot of answers. And it's not just the World Cup. It's obviously playing at a high level for so many years and obviously winning the NWSL last year in the championship and the Shield. And I think when you play in World Cups and you have success and played in multiple championships and just having that experience, big games, how to get the best out of your teammates, just closing out games.
Yeah.
You know, learning how to manage games within the game, I think can really help because I feel like I've seen it all and, you know, in games of being down, being up, how to, you know, go about those being down players, whatever it may be. So I think that, and then obviously just trying to raise the standard and the level of the players to make them realize and see that this is the level that we need to be at to achieve what we want to achieve. And then obviously the consistency that comes with performing week in and week out to get to where we want to be at the end of the year.
The number of World Cup winners who've
gone on to sign for Newcastle is vanishingly small. I mean, I think it's maybe happened once for the men's side. It clearly, obviously, it hasn't happened on the women's side. I mean, mm-hmm. This isn't really a question. It's just more of a statement. Yeah. But it is quite a, you know, as I said at the start, it's a pretty startling moment. Mm-hmm. That side of your career has obviously been huge, and you've done it all. Is that side done now? Is that finished for you, the international side, or is that still on the cards?
I don't want to never say never, but you know, I had a really good long stint with the national team and did a lot of the traveling and the grind and the double duty, and you know, I think that took a mental, physical, emotional toll on me for a long time. And so I think it would have to be special in the right moment if I were ever to like go back and entertain that. But obviously I would love to play for my country. But I also, I'm at the point too where I like to just focus on club, and you know, if that opportunity came, great. And we would kind of see where what was at that moment.
Okay. What do you know about Newcastle and the northeast of England as a region? Are you looking forward to exploring and having a look around?
Yeah, I'm excited. I know it's close to Scotland. I played with Anna Morehouse, and she's from England, and so she told me some good spots to go. And obviously, as I was flying in here, I see the water, and I love the water. I grew up on the water, so I'm excited to just be by the water and again and this close, and just the ocean in general. And yeah, I mean, I'm not really looking forward to the cold. tough.
You've missed the three hot days.
I know,
this
which I'm
year,
worried
I'm
about.
Yeah.
I know, I got off the plane today and I was like, oh my gosh, is this summer? I'm in trouble. I was like, this is cold.
Yeah, from Orlando to Newcastle.
Yeah, well, Newcastle, yeah.
Orlando
is a whole nother.
You'll acclimatize.
Yeah. Well, it's not gonna, soccer wise, I think it'll be wonderful.
Oh, there we go. So, George, things shaping up nicely for the lasses.
Yeah, I mean, we're still a little bit away from the start of the season, and we need to, you know, need to see how the signings bed in. But, you know, real big statement of intent after a summer of, you know, huge change again on and off the pitch. Very excited to see what they do. I mean, one thing I thought very interesting that Morgan talked about is that, you know, her experience at closing out games, closing out the games within games, as she sort of put it. And that was something that Newcastle didn't have last season. You know, they did really well in their first season back in the Championship, but that experience of that level, the streetwise element, was arguably missing a bit. And, you know, she's someone who has been there in the biggest matches of all, the biggest matches that you could play, having that kind of leadership in the squad, in the team, you get the feeling will be really important.
Yes, massive amounts of experience there. And she joins Newcastle on loan initially, but the suggestion could be that she could be around for a lot longer.
Orlando have said that, you know, that they're not going to take up the option of her contract that they have another year. And, you know, she's already talking about staying. So we'll have to see what happens with that. But she's very excited. It's a, you know, new challenge for her. And there's, you know, there's just been so much going on off the pitch as well, hasn't there, Chris, that, you know, a story that you've been involved in.
Yeah, so Grace Williams has arrived as the director of football for the women's team, and obviously the team are going to be moving across to Gateshead this year, so a heck of a lot. What are you laughing at?
Well, you just went, oh, the women's team. Oh, the women's team.
Diary football.
Oh, the women's team. It was good. It was a nice injection of emotion into your otherwise very, very, what's the word I'm trying to look for? Monotone
dull
delivery. Oh, the women's team.
Well, thank you. Anyway, the point is that,
Chris went through puberty during this podcast. That's excellent. Well,
you could actually hear his testicles drop. It was a beautiful moment.
Infrastructure and personnel are being invested in, and very exciting signings are being brought through the door. So, the ambition is very much to get to the WSL as quickly as possible, and promotion is very much going to be what they're aiming for, I imagine, this season. I can't see anyone talking to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I asked her, is that the aim of the season? Correct was the answer. It was like,
there you go.
Yeah.
Emphatic.
No caveats to that.
We can beat you, and we are going to win.
We'll be right back.
Right then, chaps, let's move on. Picking up the pieces at Leeds. How should we all be feeling post-Liverpool? I think Simon at the top of the show gave us a flavour of that, didn't he? But how should we be feeling, George?
Just to join in with Chris a bit. We talked about this sort of that immediate reaction after Liverpool, you know, pride, I think, and then also sort of devastation. There's messaging people at the around the club, around the team on Tuesday evening, and it was like, yeah, I've still not got over that.
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, is you know, that is the concern. It's like they've played really well in two games when the eyes of the kind of football world have been on them, looking for signs of fracture or disharmony around the whole ESAC thing, not playing with a centre forward, recognised centre forward. And, you know, sort of huge, huge encouragement to take from those games, but also have only taken 1 point. And, you know, it's a vital input. I mean, Howe talked about this after Liverpool. I just wish there was more reward for what they put into it. And of course, you know, that is important because there's a momentum aspect to it too. Yeah, there's been momentum in terms of the way they've played, but not in terms of results. So you don't want that negativity to take hold. And of course, now Newcastle will be without key players. So again, it feels like we'll be looking at them at Leeds to seeing how they respond to this latest bit of adversity. Can they pull another performance out of the bag, and can they get a result?
It's interesting because I exchanged messages with people at the club after the game on Monday, and one of them came back and sort of, because I suppose I was quite positive in terms of talking about the way that Newcastle played and sort of fighting through the adversity, as George mentions, and then sort of saying about what you can take that forward. And the response was, yeah, we're very sort of proud of the lads, but actually, football is not a romantic, it's not romantic in the sense that we lost, it never has been, and we have lost the game. And I suppose that is the reality.
That's me out of a job. That's all I've got.
Your raison d'etre, isn't it, George?
That's all it. I've got.
And that is the stark reality, is that as difficult as those first two matches were, Newcastle have got 1 point from them. Yeah. They go to Leeds on Saturday, and actually, you might think on the back of the way they've played in the first two, they should go there and potentially win, but that's not a straightforward fixture by any stretch of imagination. The fact it's at 5:30, I think, makes it even more difficult as well. So, like, you talk about Newcastle on an evening game or St. James's Park on an evening or night match, Elland Road, again, it will be a very difficult atmosphere, Newcastle walking into. They won their first home match. They have a bit of momentum behind them in that regard.
Newcastle have lost two of their starting three midfielders as well, which is huge.
But they've lost four of their starting 11 who've started the first two matches. There's going to be four changes. So the entire spine of the team, Fabian Scher, we expect, is going to be out for concussion. So therefore, either Malik Chow comes in for his full debut, or Sven Botman comes in and will play on the right-hand side as a left-footer. Midfield-wise, I thought Jacob Ramsey came on, did very well against
enjoyed him
against Liverpool, but you're going to have an entirely new midfield. A midfield who never started a match together. Bruno, does he stay as the number 8? Does he shift to the number 6? Does Lewis Miley drop? Does he play as the number 6 and then Bruno stays as the number 8? And then is it Jacob Ramsey who comes in, seemingly slightly ahead of Joe Willock, certainly fitness-wise, at the moment? So that's an entirely new midfield, lacking the legs and physicality that you would have if you have Tonali and Joe Linton in there. And then, as we're going to come on to, who starts up front? Newcastle don't have a number 9. They don't have their star striker available. They no longer have their false 9, reserve number 9, whatever you want to call him, in Anthony Gordon there. They use sort of almost like split strikers and Anthony Elanga and Harvey Barnes for part of the match against Liverpool, which I thought was a very brave move by Howe not to just shift deeper, and it allowed them to cause problems. But does he change the system? Does Will Asula make his first Premier League start? He's still yet to start a Premier League match. Or does Harvey Barnes play as a number 9? Does Jacob Murphy play as a number 9? Does Anthony Elanga play as a number 9? These are all questions which Eddie Howe is having to come up with answers to in just 3 or 4 days and try to get as much understanding and relationship building in those formations as he possibly can before they go there on Saturday.
Just stick Dan Burn up there and have done with it. Pump the ball up the pitch and get Dan Burn in the box. Knockdowns, big man in the mixer, Allardyce ball, all that shite.
We talked about a bit about this after the Liverpool match, and one of the things that I most enjoyed, this will sound like a strange kind of compliment, but was Newcastle mixing things up.
Yes,
I mean, Chris,
they did, yeah.
Chris, you know, that excellent point that Chris made about long throws, Newcastle suddenly doing that, testing the Liverpool centre-halves, the Liverpool defence. You know, the Newcastle equaliser came from the longest of, you know, long balls imaginable. Big kick from Pope, flick on, gets a little flick, and then there's Asula to kind of stick it away. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as it's, you know, as long as it's not just wild and unfocused. If it's targeted, yes, of course, you know, there's an element of desperation, or there's an element of trying to force the issue when you're trailing in a game. But
you have to play the hand you've dealt. You've been dealt, George.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, and obviously there's, you know, if you don't have a centre forward, the idea of pumping it up, you know, pumping it up the pitch is perhaps less, you know, less positive, less ideal. But like being willing to mix things up, to be pragmatic. I love that about the game against Liverpool, that, you know, Newcastle have quality, you know, absolute quality in terms of Bruno and Tonali and players like that. They want the ball. They want, you know, they can do beautiful things with the football. They've got raw pace in people like Alanga and Gordon. They've got physicality in terms of, you know, Joelinton or whatever. But they're not afraid when the time is right to actually change tactics and do different things, because I'm sick of everybody playing the same way, and I think there is something to be exploited there. Anyway, that's possibly for a different time when Newcastle sort of have more options, but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely. I think if there is a game when you could probably start Will Asula and get away with it, I think this game might be that game, Chris. I don't know how you feel about that. I know he's still learning and he's very raw, but the goal he scored on Monday night, I think he's given himself a good shot.
Yeah, I mean, he should go in with plenty of confidence because of that, and with a point to prove. I suppose the counterpoint would be going into that atmosphere at Elland Road for them, for Leeds. This is a massive match. As I mentioned before, they beat Everton at home in their first game, but they've gone to Arsenal and were hammered. They've just been knocked out of the Carabao Cup by Sheffield Wednesday in disarray. Now, in some ways, maybe they weren't bothered about that, and it's all the focus is on the Premier League. But this is home fixtures for Leeds. It's a cliche, but for those promoted sides, each of them have won at home already, and for them this will be massive. And I think that in some ways they may sniff blood with Newcastle as well and think this is an opportunity for them. So, I mean, I think I probably would go for Will Asula, because if you're not going to start him now and give him that sort of boost, an additional confidence boost, when is he ever going to start certainly a league match? So I think I would give him that opportunity, but equally it wouldn't surprise me if Eddie Howe went for something different if he wants. I think the thing with he doesn't get with from Asula yet is that he's still not, he doesn't trust exactly what he's going to do in certain moments, and maybe with someone like Harvey Barnes or Jacob Murphy, he might just have a better feeling about exactly what they're going to do in those moments. But I also think that that may lessen Newcastle's potential threat, so I probably would go for Asula.
The other thing to say is to flip what Chris said, and totally get it. You know, they may look at Newcastle and think there's a sort of chink of light there, there's a bit of weakness, injuries. But the other part of it is that, you know, gone are the days when, as people watching Newcastle, we think about a fixture and think about it in terms of trepidation, because if Newcastle do find a way of bottling that same performance, attitude, commitment that they've shown in their first two matches, you know, Newcastle should be going to Leeds thinking of that as an opportunity, not about damage limitation, not about worrying about dealing with Elland Road. All those things are there to be considered. But, you know, Newcastle have got a good... I mean, one other thing, you know, they will need it, but when we looked at the bench pre-match, Chris, we were talking about saying that's actually a strong bench. Yeah, there are not a lot of forward options. We know that, we understand that. But Newcastle do have the makings of a good squad now, and they're going to need it, obviously.
We have to ask for a penny for the thoughts of Sean Longstaff as well, Chris. What must he be thinking at the minute coming up against his former team?
Yeah, and he probably would have started this weekend if he was starting. That's also come back to Elland Road. Yeah. But no, I mean, I assume that I speak for most listeners to this podcast, there's certainly a lot to say, that I only wish Sean Longstaff the very, very best. It felt like a natural juncture for him to leave in the summer. Obviously, Newcastle got a fee from which arguably was and probably should have been higher, but it's pure profit. It helps them from a PSR perspective, but also I think in terms of what Newcastle are looking for, what Eddie Howe's looking for in the midfield. He hadn't started a Premier League match since early December last year. It was sort of a natural exit point for him, but what a wonderful servant he was for Newcastle. What a huge player, reached some massive heights, fulfilled his dreams, reached a Champions League, won a cup, and I really hope it works out well for him at Leeds. Obviously not on Saturday, I don't want it to go well for him this weekend, or at least Leeds aside, but going forward I hope him and Leeds do well, because I think it's a very good move for him. I think that he should suit them, and yeah, just wish him all the very, very best.
Yeah, I'd like to leap in there and say similar. Obviously our pod was temporarily suspended when he when he moved over the summer, but just to say the same thing, yeah, I mean, his story of kind of renaissance at Newcastle, you know, having those really, you know, coming through under Rafa, having that great start, and then really the struggles that he had under Steve Bruce, and then coming to the fore again, rising with the club post takeover, being such a fundamental part of the team and the squad and the midfield, seeing one of our own do it at that level was just really pleasing. He, you know, he did all of that sort of unseen dirty work for the team, you know, didn't get plaudits necessarily all the time because of that. You know, when he was alongside Bruno, for example, you know, it's, he perhaps has different qualities, but it was that eagerness to run and to be selfless that allowed Bruno to do what he did. No one's got a bad word to say about him. Fantastic lad. I've loved interviewing him when I did, and just wish him nothing but success at Leeds. And Leeds, of course, you know, they're a brilliant club. Fantastic, I think, to see them, a club of their stature and history, back in the Premier League. It'll be a good occasion. It'll be big for him.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't come out on top. But yeah, it's great to see him play.
Yeah, that goal against Paris Saint-Germain and the two against Southampton in the Cup semi-final as well.
In
unbelievable moments. Yeah. That'll stay with me for life. Incredible stuff. Right then, let's move on. As our friend NUFC Threat Level is pointing out on social media, today is the 28th anniversary of our first ever qualification for Champions League football. We'll have another short show for you later in the week reacting to this year's draw, albeit we already know that we're going to be playing loads and loads of teams. And I'm sure George will love a trip to Kazakhstan, or potentially one of those clubs up in the Arctic Circle. Chris, how do you fancy that? Is that far enough north for you?
So that's an interesting point, yeah, because I suppose Kazakhstan is east as well. I think actually the club that have qualified to beat Celtic, knocked them out, is actually further east than the eastern furthest part of China. So it's quite a way across. And the Arctic Circle, Bodo / Glimt. I mean, any side which has / in its name is, for me, I would like to visit, because I just think that's weird.
Because you can't go 15 minutes without needing a / is that?
Quite. But yeah, I mean, George can definitely go to Kazakhstan if that happens, because he'd love that. And I'd very much like to read his weary recollection of his trip across to Kazakhstan.
Yes, that definitely sounds like a special podcast that we'll be putting out. George's travels across Kazakhstan on an old motorbike.
Yeah. Let us know how the rest of puberty goes for you, Chris.
We've got the League Cup draw tonight as well, chaps. Our defence of the title begins. League Cup holders, Newcastle United. Who do we fancy? Who should we have?
George would like Plymouth away. I don't even know if Plymouth are still in it, but
Plymouth away.
Somebody at home. Let's keep it like that. It sounds good though, that, doesn't it? Newcastle United cup holders.
Anybody but cup Sunderland. Holders.
Well, Sunderland is an impossibility because they got knocked out.
That's very true. Yeah, exactly.
So that will happen. I just can confirm that will happen. It will be anybody but Sunderland.
Anybody but Sunderland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, there we go. Get your emails in podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky @podonthetyne. And please do help us make an impression in the podcast market by giving us a rating and a review on your podcast outlet of choice. That's about it for now. Thank you very much, chaps. Thank you, Chris Woff, resplendent in Jamaica football shirt.
You're very welcome. Yes, just in honour of Isaac Hayden finding a new club, returning to Queen's Park Rangers, so wish him the very best there as well.
Absolutely, and thank you very much, George, for your time.
You're so incredibly welcome.
And thank you very much out there for listening as well, from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Take it easy, we'll speak to you later in the week. Goodbye.
Have you ever had a sort of English team that you've followed, or a player?
You know, I watched Miguel Almirón was here.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was with Atlanta United and they were sick.
Yeah.
They were so good.
Yeah.
They were electric. And so I liked watching him and then followed him here. Yeah. They're not as good right now, but
Yeah. So here we are. How are the lads? Okay, that's...
Yeah. You'll have to. How are the lasses?
How are the lasses?
Yeah.
I love it when it's empty. You get that... I don't know.
It feels like...
I always feel like you can feel everybody who's ever been in this stadium.
And yeah.
There is, you know, obviously there's talk about moving stadiums eventually, but...
Yeah.
The fact it's the same stretch of grass that, you know, Shearer played on, obviously, but then...
Feels nice.